The next case will be 071065, SRI International v. Internet Security Systems. Mr. Schickenbach?
Good morning, Your Honor. Counsel, may it please the Court. This is not a printed publication case. I want to spend the majority of my time on that issue. I'll touch briefly on enablement. If you put this case in the context of this Court's precedence in on printed publication, it seems to us reasonably clear that this is not really very close to the line. This Court has decided on the order of half a dozen, maybe seven, printed publication cases in recent times. Those cases fall into a few categories, and I think looking at the categories is instructive as to just how different this case is. One of those categories has to do with deposits with or publications by foreign patent offices. That's the Wire case written by Judge Rich, the Bruckelmeyer case. This, of course, is a completely different set of facts from that. Another set of cases, and by far the most prevalent set of cases, are library cases, which some of the members of this particular panel are familiar with. The Cronin case, the Bayer case, the Hall case, and even actually the Mopex case that defendants rely on in the end is a library case. This is not a library case. We're not talking about a publicly accessible location where a publication was
deposited. Wait, an FTP site is not a publicly accessible location?
Certainly not in the sense of a library. It is accessible only in the sense of, on this record, if somebody gave the specific path to an individual, you can access it. Yes.
Well, you don't necessarily have to have a specific path to the actual live traffic paper publication, right? You just need to know the FTP address and you can navigate your way through the menu.
Well, the answer to that question is nobody knows. Whether this site was navigable in 1997...
Okay, well, they produced evidence that seemed to me to suggest it was navigable. They certainly produced evidence of its current navigability,
correct.
And they produced evidence of emails by the patentee that told people, go to this site, this subfolder, this subfolder, this subfolder. And you all are the ones with all the evidence with regarding what this site should have, because it's your site. So it seems to me they put forth a prima facie case of its navigability, and you've put forth nothing other than they haven't proven it was navigable.
Well, I'm glad you raised that, because I think the briefing made it sound as though we're trying to sort of benefit from our own inability or negligence in maintaining records or something like that. It's important the court understand there's two categories of evidence here, okay? There's what happened in 97 and whether there is evidence of what the site was in 1997. There is no evidence of that except the emails that show specific documents that were or were not available on the site at that time, and they have complete paths. Okay? Now, from those paths, you can determine that there existed a pub folder in 1997. We agree. You can determine there existed in 1997 another folder, maybe a dev folder. Okay? But that doesn't mean that you could navigate around the folders to find what it is you wanted to find.
But your patentee's emails told people to do exactly that. He told them to access the paper in the following route.
He didn't tell them to navigate. I mean, the rhetoric about navigation is something that the defendants supplied. What he told them is, you can go to csl.sri.com, okay? We know that there is an FTP site SRI maintains. We don't dispute that. There is a site. Every single time Mr. Porras directed somebody to that site, he gave them a complete, with one exception, which is Teresa Lund, which we deal with in our papers, an ex-SRI employee, he told them exactly where to go and exactly what the complete path name was. There are eight examples. One was Ms. Lund. The other seven were outsiders. Now, if it were true, if we're going to debate this navigability point, if it were true that people knew to navigate, why would Mr. Porras be giving these individuals who the district court believed and the defendants have argued are very sophisticated technically, why would you have to give them the complete path? Why would you have to tell them exactly where that file is?
Because it's easier. It's easier to direct someone, you know, as opposed to come to my street and look for my car just to give them my street address, right?
It is okay.
It's easier, so that's why.
It is easier. But what we're talking about here really, around, we're arguing over an inference, whether they should get an inference. I mean, that's really not appropriate in the context of this case.
But what evidence have you all presented that it wasn't navigable? Because they presented some that it was. They presented the fact that it is navigable now, and that there are these emails that suggest it was similarly navigable in 1997.
Well,
so what contrary evidence have you presented?
The answer is, first of all, it's their burden, okay?
Right, but
they've
put something forward. It's not insignificant.
Using 2006 and 2007 evidence of what can happen today.
And emails that suggest that the same was true.
Well, but again, with all due respect, I think Your Honor may have a view of what those emails show, but that's an inference based on those emails that was telling people with skill in the art to navigate. The other inference is they couldn't navigate, and that's why you had to give them the complete path.
Mr. Schirkenbach, this is the security community. Wouldn't they know how to navigate these things? We're talking about pretty sophisticated people, aren't we?
Yes, we are. But Your Honor, if you look at and I don't dispute that if the site were navigated, and if somebody happened to go there in the 7-day period where the paper was there, they might have found it. We don't dispute that. But that doesn't make this a printed publication case, right? That was true in the Bayer case. That's true in other cases that this court has decided. Somebody could possibly have found it. The question is it sufficiently publicly accessible in the context of this court's precedents? And the answer here has got to be no. I mean, if you look at the overall set of facts here as to what happened in 1997, you have a gentleman, Mr. Porras, who at the same time that he puts this backup copy on the FTP site, he puts an abstract, a 2-page abstract of this paper, on the World Wide website. Totally different sites, okay? Both maintained by SRI. Now,
is there any expectation of confidentiality because this is kind of a pre-viewing of something that's going to be presented later at a conference?
Yeah, absolutely, Your Honor. And in fact, I don't believe defendants dispute that proposition. That's something, in fact, this court in the Klopfenstein case said was quite important and is a factor that ought to be considered. And was there a reasonable expectation? This is a scientific, peer-reviewed type process of confidentiality. There's evidence in the record. Mr. Porras was asked this in deposition, and he said, absolutely. When you're submitting a paper to a symposium or a conference, it is confidential. Everybody knows those things are not shared around. And in this case, there's nothing Mr. Porras did that indicated anything other than he sent it privately to Mr. Bishop. And he said, as a backup, I'll stick it for 7 days on the FTP site, never expecting Mr. Bishop to go there, let alone that people in the world at large would find it. Now, Judge Moore, just to get back to your point, you said, what other evidence? To me, the most powerful evidence is the fact that after the fact, the very people who were supposed to have navigated and been capable of finding this paper didn't. Because they sent emails to Mr. Porras saying, give us a copy, we'd like the full copy. So you've got a worldwide web posting with a legend at the bottom that says, you can't have the full paper now, check back in November, and people do.
But, counsel, our precedent has been really clear that it's not whether or not something was in fact accessed, but whether or not it could be accessed.
I agree.
So the fact that nobody actually might have looked at it, like if there's a counter on the bottom, it might still read zero today, who knows? But the fact of whether someone looked at it or not is not really the relevant inquiry, unless I'm misunderstanding. I mean, why, if your client expected this to be confidential, I mean, certainly it's within his sophistication to understand passwords or encryption keys and all those other things. I mean, goodness, they couldn't have a more sophisticated computer group than the group of people we're looking at now, but none of that was employed, wasn't it?
Because he had a reasonable expectation that the paper was confidential. I mean,
why did he have such an expectation? Did he put confidential on it? Did he put the words on it, confidential?
On the paper itself, no, he didn't.
Other than his ex post statement that he expected it to be confidential, and I might even agree with you that peer-reviewed type submissions generally are, but not once you post them on the internet, in the absence of Google.
But see, this it's so hard in this case to forget everything we know about the internet today. Okay? This is not an internet posting case. SRI had a worldwide website at the time. They have one today. This is nothing. This case, this issue before you has nothing to do with the worldwide website. That's where defendants started in the district court. They based their motion on the World Wide Web posting, and we showed that there was no posting of the paper on the World Wide Web. It was a 2-page abstract. So they gave up on that argument and retooled their case in reply to focus on this temporary residence on the FTP for 7 days. And that has become sort of the internet case. And in fact, they're very careful to call it an FTP website.
But back in the 90s, wasn't FTP used even more widely than today?
I'm sorry, Mr.
Back in the
at the time.
Back in the 90s, wasn't FTP used even more widely than today?
There isn't evidence in the record specifically to that effect, Your Honor. So I guess we don't know one way or the other. Maybe so for the transfer of files if somebody was directed to the site and told that the files were
This was in a public folder, not a private one, wasn't it? Is that significant?
It was in the Emerald folder, is where Mr. Porras put it. Public in the sense that if somebody had the address, they could go get the document from that specific folder. Yes. Whether other areas of the site were restricted or not, we don't know in 1997. We don't know. The evidence is in the record.
You want to say your rebuttal?
I do, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Slutsky, I'm sorry.
May it please the Court, I'm Brad Slutsky, I represent Defendant Apelli Internet Security Systems. I'll address the live traffic paper, which anticipates all four SRIs.
Now, you've got to have a specific kind of software to use this FTP site, right?
There are multiple kinds of software.
Yeah, but you've got to have some specific. This is the early dark ages of cyberspace. You've got to have precise commands, precise equipment, and there really isn't any clear evidence that anybody really went there. Why is this different from an uncatalogued dissertation?
Your Honor, I would respectfully submit that there is a lot of evidence that people went there. In fact, the website was publicized quite a bit by SRI itself. In the record, A1538 and going on, there's a long list of SRI's publications going back to 1985.
Yeah, and I suppose people can go thumb through uncatalogued dissertations too at libraries. I'm sure a lot of students do that and profit from it. The question, though, is whether this is more like an uncatalogued dissertation or one that's cataloged.
Well, I would suggest that, and the district court found, that this site was indexed by virtue of the structure of the directories on the site. It only took, the evidence shows, 3 clicks to find this paper. You get to the main FTP site, and from there, as they've acknowledged, you can go to the pub directory instead of the dev directory for development information. From the pub directory,
why would you know to do those things?
Because you're an expert in the field of computer security, you probably have an FTP site yourself, which is one of the factors as who's the audience here. From the pub directory, you would go to the Emerald directory, and the evidence shows that Emerald was well-publicized. The articles that I've just referred to in the record show it was a well-publicized security research project. And once you were in the Emerald directory, there was the paper itself relating to the NDSS 98 conference.
You didn't say they'd go to a website, did you?
If I did, I didn't mean to.
Oh, I didn't think you did.
Judge Moore, I think you really put your finger on it here. The issue is that we did meet our prima facie case of establishing anticipation by clear and convincing evidence, and they've really come forward with nothing in response. And as a result, they lose on summary judgment under Matsushita. Before I talk about all the evidence of what we did show with respect to navigability, which extends from 1994 through 2006, I want to talk about a couple of things that we did not have to show that they point to. First, as Your Honor noted, we did not have to show that the paper was accessed. It is sufficient to show that it was accessible. Second, we do not have to show that there was an intent to publicize the paper. They quote this court's decision in Wire for their argument that intent should be examined to determine whether it was a printed publication. But they leave off the very end of the sentence they quote, which says that intent is, quote, neither always conclusive nor requisite. They leave that part out.
But what about the cryptic name of the paper, NDSS98.PS, PS meaning postscript? Isn't postscript printer language to print out a document? Isn't this a, isn't that very title misleading? Kind of like, not only are we uncatalogued, we're maybe miscatalogued with that kind of a title. Any thoughts on that?
Well, the .ps is an extension that we see throughout the record multiple times. That's how they publish their papers. It's in a PostScript format. It's likened to a PDF format that we use more often today. The NDSS stood for the Network and Distributed Security Symposium in 98, being the one that was coming up in a few months. So the name of the file itself indicates that it has something to do with security, and the fact that it's in the Emerald Directory indicates that it has something to do with
What's
security.
The difference between this, your case and the and Ray Cronin?
I just want to be sure that I've got the right facts in the Cronin case.
Well, where there was, there was an index card in the catalog.
It was indexed by the author's name there, so the index there was criticized for not relating to the subject matter of the paper, making it difficult to identify the subject matter of what you were looking
right.
for.
Why is your case different from that?
Here, the indexing does relate to the subject matter of the paper. It's on a site that's publicized as a security site, and it's in a directory, the Emerald Directory, that was publicized as the most recent security research of this company, and the name of it relates to a security conference coming up. So we know that this file, the index tells you that this file is the latest 1998 security information, and you're in 97 when it's posted, relating to the latest research project on security by SRI on a site that was well publicized for relating to security. I want to dispose of this notion that we didn't come forward with evidence even in the relevant time frame that the website was navigable. And I submit that the evidence shows that from 1994 through 2006, the evidence shows the site was navigable.
But can we go back to the title point just a little bit? There isn't a title on this. As our presiding judge pointed out, you'd expect to see something that might alert people that this is an important paper on a topic. Instead, it's NDSS98.ps.
Well, NDSS is the acronym.
I understand what it is for a conference.
What's
the title of the paper?
The title of the paper is Live Traffic, something or other.
You're not going to... No, this isn't going to identify what you're looking for. We're back to the Cronin case where the cataloging, if it is there at all, is misleading.
Well, I don't think it's misleading. This directory and the name all indicate that this is the latest security research from a company that publicized that this is where they keep their security research. So if you go into this Emerald Directory, which is the latest security project from this company, and you see that I have a paper relating to something that's coming up next year in 98, it would be a paper that would be of interest to people. And they would know that it would relate to security, and in fact it does. It's their latest security research.
Counsel, if we disagree with you that it was indexed, or disagree with the lower court that it was indexed, and so therefore it makes the Cronin inquiry a little more difficult, what about Klopfenstein, Judge Prost's case, Klopfenstein? In that case, she says if something is temporarily displayed, which this clearly was temporary, not distributed or indexed, you know, she articulated a four-factor test for public accessibility then. How do you think this case compares to that?
Well, I'm glad you point that out. Klopfenstein is a case where there was not an index. The papers were just accessible in a place where people had access to them for a period of 3 days. And the factors in that case were the length of time the document was accessible. There was 3 days. Here it was a week, and I would submit that our week is a much longer week than 3 days there, because you don't have to go to a conference and buy a plane ticket. You don't have to be in the presence of the documents there during the time that the conference is open or the building is open. Here, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days during the week. Wherever you happen to be, at your office, at home, in an internet cafe, anywhere that you have internet access, you have access to this document during that week, as opposed to in the Klopfenstein case, where it was only during the time that the paper was accessible. The next factor under Klopfenstein is expertise of the target audience. Judge Moore, as you pointed out, Here we have computer security experts. It's easily within their expertise to make three clicks on an anonymous FTP site. Reasonable expectation that the document would not be copied. With all respect to my brother at the bar, I think that if you put a document on an FTP site that you yourself have advertised as a source of security information, that others have posted on Usenet, and that you've sent in email messages, that this is a site for security information, where there's a Swedish article that cites to your site as a place that has security information, you cannot have a reasonable, and you don't put any password protection, no encryption, you don't label the document as confidential, you don't even put a copyright notice on the submission, even though the call for papers had a copyright notice. And there are no instructions that it not be copied. You cannot reasonably expect that it won't be copied. And of course, the last factor is ease of copying, and here the paper is on a file transfer protocol site where the very purpose is to make electronic copies of this electronic document. And so I think the Klopfenstein factors weigh heavily in favor of the document being a printed publication. But I do want to turn quickly to the...
Well, you're going to be going into your colleague's time if you want to use his. You divided it up for some reason.
Given that they have not really addressed enablement and the fact that there's a dispute about what happened in 97, I do want to address this, even if we use that time, unfortunately.
All right.
The Usenet printout at A3558, they cited on pages 9 and 23 of their brief in support of the notion that there was one entry there that shows a full URL. They never addressed the points raised in our brief that show that many of those entries direct people just to directories on the site, leaving them to navigate. In fact, the second bullet point on the page refers to the NIDES directory, and we know from the Swedish publication that there's an article in the NIDES directory that is referenced. So there's an evidence of navigability going back to 1994 and 1995 in those entries, and they don't even try to dispute those. If we look at the Lunt email from December of 1996, Ms. Lunt was just directed to the pub directory and not even to a specific file name. They argue that she was an employee, and they cite the record for that. Then they argue that she had special access to the site, and they don't cite anything in the record because they came forward with no evidence from anything in the record, because there is no evidence that she had any special access, nor is there any evidence that employees generally had any special access, and they note they had 2,000 employees, nor is there any evidence that navigability would be any different if you did have a special password. And in fact, they have not even come forward with any evidence in this case that there is such a thing as a non-navigable FTP site, when these record documents show that people did have to navigate the site. If you go forward to 1997, there are the email messages, including the ones using asterisks. And in 2006, there's evidence of what the site looked like and how it was navigable back then. I see that my time is up.
All right. Thank you, sir. Mr. Schreckenbach.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me address the key points in reverse order. First of all, Judge Moore, Klopfenstein. That's a dissemination case. That's a case where there was a public dissemination in the faces of the people who were equipped to understand and take the information. The court, in fact, went out of its way to observe that the key information could be gleaned from one or two slides that sat on a poster board for three straight days. That is a completely different situation than this case. It doesn't make any sense to require an index in a case where you've got a public demonstration dissemination in the faces of the audience. Judge Mayer asked about the Cronin case. Even in that case, where there was a finding of no publication, you at least had a title of a paper that described the contents of the paper. I won't try to repeat it because it's a long chemical name, but the title was very descriptive of the subject matter of that paper. No publication.
But wouldn't you say that the conference, NDSS, that cyber folks know what that conference acronym stands for? This is, you know, that it generally covers cybersecurity. And so, while you may not know the exact content of the paper, wouldn't it give you the subject matter?
That's an argument, and that's an inference the defendants want in their favor. There's no evidence of that. There's no declaration from somebody in the record saying, hey, everybody knew what NDSS was. That's, maybe it's plausible,
But this was decided in summary judgment against us on the eve of trial, with the result being that the patent portfolio is wiped out. So a 7-day temporary residence of a file that says NDSS.PS has taken away SRI's patent portfolio in this area. It's just, there's nothing in this court's case law that, to me, sanctions that harsher result. There's no, if you had searched, suppose you had gone to the FTP site and you were looking around for information relating to Emerald, okay? This is all about Emerald. You wouldn't have found this paper. There's nothing in the title that would have allowed you to find Emerald, even if you could have searched.
Well, you would have gone to the Emerald folder and you would have seen NDSS, and if you were a sophisticated cyber person and you knew of the conference, you would pop it open and look at it.
But Your Honor, with all due respect, if you know where you're going to end up, you would make the choices that the district court said you should make. You go to the FTP site initially, and there are, this is in the court's opinion at A3515, there are actually 6 subfolders under the publication folder. 6 subfolders, each of which has God knows what else, and other publications and other subfolders.
Are they NDSSs as well?
Of course not. No, none of them. I mean, the titles are in many cases cryptic. I don't know what all of them are, Your Honor. They're in the record at 3515.
But you could look at NDSS, and that might have been just the list of people who were going to participate. You don't have any idea that this is
a
paper.
Sure, it could
have
been.
But, counsel, did you put any evidence in the record? See, this is my problem. Summary judgment, you're right, we shouldn't rule on fact questions, and the court below certainly shouldn't either, but there has to be a genuine dispute over a material issue of fact. So what evidence did you all put in the record that causes a dispute?
Well, of course, our fundamental argument is that the whole navigability question is beside the point.
But I looked at these 2 emails again. I sat here and found them at 9877 and 9878 of the record. And there's 2 emails, not one, 2. One to a Terry Champion and the second one to a Teresa Lunt. And both of them suggest navigating through the pub directory. In your initial argument, you said there was 1 email that did that. There's actually 2 distinct ones.
Those emails make an interesting point. Champion email, 4 is one of the 4 emails of the 7 that defendants point to. There's the Danielson email, the Champion email, the Wood email.
Yeah, you're running out of time, so tell me
why. All 4 of those show that those emails, they were directed to the pub folder, not to the Emerald folder. So, and yet in this case, they want an inference that somebody who was searching
this email says pub/Emerald. That's pub folder, then go to the Emerald folder within the pub folder.
Emerald is in the name of the file in that case. It's not a separate folder. There's
Got
no slash after it.
You're right.
So even in many of their own examples, people are going to a different folder for information on Emerald.
All right.
They want an inference in their favor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Case is submitted.